Good morning, everyone. In trying to help us catch up on the time schedule, which is now 15 minutes behind, we are going to go ahead and commence with the Human Resource Committee for Monday, June 4th.
Okay, fine.
Technically 11:15, but we've turned into 11:30. So good morning. First item on the agenda would be the approval of the minutes from the April 30th meeting. Do we have any comments or questions about the minutes?
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Okay. Our second item is public comments. Would anyone like to get up and speak about anything at all regarding HR or the items on today's agenda? Well, moving right along, our third item is Employee Years of Service Recognition. And Mr. DeMora and Ms. Kelly, can you help us with this?
I've got it.
Yep. Ah, Christiane, Ms. Farrell.
Oh, yay. Hey, we are recognizing Markel Crookson today for 10 years of service. Most of y'all are familiar with seeing him up in the communications area and probably don't realize for about 7 years he was a police officer. And he was a patrolman and then went on to become one of our traffic officers. But when we decided to make some changes up in the communications office for specifically for multimedia purposes. We knew that we already had an asset here at Town Hall, so I want to share a little bit about that with you, because you may not realize that most of his skills that are related to his multimedia, or many of them anyway, were actually used and perfected in his role with the United States Air Force. And so he brings all those skills that he has learned in various areas, including in the Air Force, to this particular position, which he started in 2015. So over the past 3 years in this job, he has helped us to earn several of the earned Permies Creative Awards for digital photography, video work. He has also helped us to integrate emerging technologies here at Newtown Hall. A lot of the setup that you see here, he had a hand in. He's the one who initiated the Facebook Live, which has been extremely successful in terms of our viewership for town council meetings. He serves as our AD manager, and he oversees our website. He handles all the digital boards that you see around town. So he's very busy with that. I also, though, wanted to recognize his other job. Lieutenant Markel Crookson was activated to the Middle East in support of the war against terror and later to Alaska for various joint service military operations. And while serving abroad, he earned the prestigious 2017 Air Force Reserve Command Public Affairs Officer of the Year Award. So that was just this past year for his work as the Chief Public Affairs Officer in the Air Force. And so that's a little above and beyond what he does here, and so we are obviously very lucky to have someone with that type of experience and that type of expertise working for us here at Town Hall. And then I also found out recently, because Markel and I live in the same neighborhood, and a magazine came out for Tarquest, and there he was on the cover with his family, and I kind of found out he's also a salsa dancer. So I found a dance salsa dancer.
How's it feel to be on the other side of the camera for a change?
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, thank you so much, Markel. We're so thrilled not only to have you here for 10 years, but bringing such a wealth of experience and background to the town. Thank you very much. And congratulations. Okay, item number four is consideration of updates to the Town of Mount Pleasant Human Resource Guidelines and implementation of non-discriminatory policies in the town's ordinances. And we're going to hear from Megan Kelly on this subject, our Director for Human Resources. And I just want to give a small amount of background. We had a couple different things that came up in sequence. We had already been, the staff had already been working for a while to update our guidelines on a number of different issues, which Megan will cover. Some of the things had to do with going along with the ADA, American Disabilities Act guidelines. And so this had been in the works for quite a while, as you will see, quite a bit of volume of just great updates. And I did ask the question, because we had a preliminary meeting, is there anything that's going to upset anybody or cause any controversy? And quite the opposite. These are all things that are extremely staff friendly. So hopefully this will make a lot of folks very happy. The other thing, and I just wanted to, this is why I'm introducing, I wanted to thank Guangming Whitley, our fellow council member, for her catching, with her sharp legal eye, catching the fact that we didn't have it codified specifically, not because it wasn't in compliance, it was, but we wanted to make sure that not only did we have gender equality and all the other types of equality, they're extremely important, but that we spelled out that we also had equality for sexual orientation, so no discrimination of any kind. So these are all going to be covered, and Megan, if you'll take it from there.
For vacation leave, employees can now start using it right away as soon as it's accrued upon hire, instead of having a waiting period of 6 months. And the accrual rates and the time bands, how often you get it, will be more generous for everyone. Also, we have an opportunity when budget permits to sell back vacation time around the holidays, and so we will make a flexible deadline to allow people to have some money spending for holidays. Instead, we used to do a December 1st deadline, but now we've, in the past couple of years, moved it up into November, Black Friday. And also, we have people who are retiring, and they know in advance, well in advance, they're going to retire, and so they will tell us 2 months in advance, but give us formal resignation 2 weeks out, because we have a stipulation that you cannot use paid leave once you give your intent to resign. And so we will allow people who are retiring the ability to give a long notice and use that paid leave up until 2 weeks of their last day. Under sick leave, it mimics vacation. You can use it as soon as it's accrued. And we will now allow the ability to use sick leave to care for your immediate family members. And we define them as your spouse or cohabitant, your children, and your parents. And again, that's taking them to the provider to see anything for medical, dental, or vision-related needs. And then, again, with retirement, you can use your sick leave up until 2 weeks in front of your retirement date. For promotions, we currently promote somebody, and then at 6 months, they get a performance evaluation and 3% increase. And instead, what we're going to do is say, your next evaluation will be on the regular annual evaluation schedule, but we don't want to take away that 3%. So we are going to give that 3% upfront to people. So right now you either go to the minimum, or if you make more than the minimum pay of your new pay grade, you go to plus 3%. We're going to request that it be minimum plus 3%, or if you're above it, 6%. So just kind of folding that in and giving a little bit earlier. And we have a list on HR of what positions we do background checks for and credit checks, education verification for promotions. And we're not going to run all of them automatically, so it will be dependent on the job duties and the business necessity. We increased the amount of longevity awards. That rate hadn't changed in a while, and so we wanted to increase that, and that was part of the budget approval process. And we're going to remove the key staff designation. After you were hired at a certain position, management and above, we called you key staff and we asked for 1 year probationary period. We really want managers to perform. We still have that same expectation. We found in reality we were getting snagged with benefits and they wouldn't get certain benefits until a year out instead of 6 months like everybody else. So we're going to take them onto the same schedule. We offer incentive pay, which is additional rate added to your hourly rate, let's say. For planning and fire and some other positions, and we want to allow our policy to be a little more vague and not specifically name those so that we can open it up to other positions in the future. Give us some flexibility on that. And then we have found, for instance, lately with the school resource officers being placed at all the elementary schools, we had all hands on deck. We needed volunteers to work their days off at schools. And so as an incentive, the town administrator was able to offer people pay rate at time and a half, that overtime rate, if you would. Even if I took a vacation day on Monday and volunteered on Friday, my day off, I could be paid at time and a half as an incentive. And we want to allow the town administrator that flexibility on unusual circumstances on a case-by-case basis to be able to do that, even if I don't hit that 40-hour overtime threshold. Makes sense? Any questions on those benefits so far? Okay. Moving into just some general operations, and Ms. Whitley brought this up, we're going to be including the term sexual orientation and gender identity in our equal employment opportunity and harassment policies that already exist in the human resource guidelines. Right now, new hires can start every other Monday, and so we are going to allow them to start every Monday. We'll still run orientation every other Monday, but I think that'll help the managers get people in just 1 week earlier. It can make a big difference. And right now, payroll transactions must occur at the beginning of a pay period. That really does help things in finance and HR with a smooth transition and retro pay and all that kind of stuff. But we'll say it should most of the time be at the beginning of the pay period, but we can make some exceptions when we need to start somebody or do a promotion or something mid-cycle. Because of the way that our new human resource information system is configured, it wants to take a deduction for benefits out right after the effective date of the benefits. Right now, we correlate it to your pay period. And so maybe you have a check, and then that next check has that first deduction. Well, the system wants to take it out of the first check. So instead of fighting the system every time, we're going to let it take it out of that first check. And then when somebody leaves, we won't take it out of their last check. We'll turn it off. So you'll be equal the same, just moving it up to play with the system. And then if an employee is out on leave, they've run through their sick or their vacation, or they're on workers' comp leave, and so they're getting paid directly from the carrier, right now they come in every other Friday, and they pay us for their health insurance, their vision, whatever their deductions would be for benefits. And that still will largely continue. But if we know somebody's coming back in a short amount of time, we'd like to make arrangements with them individually and say, okay, you're going to miss two paychecks, and then you'll be back. We'll double up on the next two or something like that. So we want to be able to put pay arrangements on the table for that. And then right now in finance, we make sure that you hit your budgeted hours every week. If you work Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30, biweekly checks should be 75 hours. And if it's not 75, if you come in at 74, they will ask you to put an hour of vacation in. We would like to have exceptions for that if somebody is late. In some departments, they dock them and they pay them when they actually arrive. And right now, they're replenished by vacation time instead of feeling the pain of being late. So we want to be able to, for disciplinary reasons, not have to fulfill that. And also, when it comes to people being out for on-the-job injuries, they may be paid by the insurance carrier, and so they won't have a full check, and we don't want to have to make them use their sick or vacation on top of being paid by the carrier. So we want that ability. And then we have a new emergency manager who's been doing a great job. She's reviewed the policy that we have, and we have essential and non-essential, and today we have limited essential designation, and that's kind of confusing, and so we're going to remove that and have the two categories now, and she's spelled them out for us, what it means. Right now, drug and alcohol testing is performed every time somebody is hurt on the job and needs medical care, or if they have an accident and they cause material damage. It's just an automatic. What we're going to move to is that we will do testing for drugs and alcohol if we think they've been a factor in causing the accident.
Can I ask about that? Because I assume there's liability issues there and risk management issues there. So does that lessen the protection of the town just because with the new drugs and legal drugs and non-legal drugs, isn't it safer just to go ahead and across the board do it in all cases?
Well, that's what we have done in the past, but OSHA has a different feeling about that. And from the federal level, they've mandated that automatic drug and alcohol testing stop and passing down to the state levels as well. So we really aren't allowed to test anymore.
So how do we determine when we think it might be a factor? Who makes that determination?
The supervisor. So we're going to have to provide some in-depth training to the supervisors. We have it in the HR guidelines, a list of 12 different factors of what reasonable suspicion is. And we're going to have to do training and have somebody there and have those discussions and be engaging to find out if it could have possibly been a factor.
What about transportation jobs? Usually, generally speaking, in the past, anything transportation related would require drug screening as well.
We'll still have to be compliant with the CDL requirements for those.
Anything heavy equipment, anything transportation oriented, okay.
Yeah, that definitely covers it. We're bound by the CDL, DOT rules.
Great, thank you.
Uh-huh. And then we also have a new risk manager. Dana has done a great job really combing through the HR guidelines, offering some great advice and some great suggestions with when it comes to workers' comp, loss control, ADA, driver's license checks and stuff. So we want to incorporate all of her impact input on that as well. Any questions on that section, operations? Okay. Some new policies that we want to add in, brand new, hot off the press, May 18th, signed into law with South Carolina Pregnancy Accommodations Act, which largely kind of mimic what we were doing already and what many did under ADA, but it is just spelling out the specific accommodations for women who are pregnant. And so we're going to take what is our lactation accommodation policy and just now rename it to be the pregnancy accommodation policy and add those things in with it. And then when we moved in the building, we had a lengthy town hall security policy, how we are living here with access and badges, and so we'll put that in a condensed format. One of the great things that our strategic plan values is training for our employees, and so we came up and budgeted as part of the STRAT plan money for non-management level employees to attend outside training opportunities. And so we want to just fold that in with our education. We have a tuition reimbursement program for associates, bachelor's, master's degrees. We want to add this in that area with its own policy.
Just one basic question. When you say non-management, does that mean non-supervisory, or is there a definition of what management is versus supervisory?
We did not draw a line in the sand. And so any person that comes to us that says they want to do something, if we have the funds, we want to be able to make it happen for them. But we really want to encourage people who are not in management or supervisory roles. We would give those funds for them before we would give it for managers or directors.
So in the manual, then, when you say management, how is that different from supervisory versus non-supervisory? Is there are positions dedicated or described as one or the other?
I'm not spelling it out in the manual.
Okay. So.
Discretion.
What are your thoughts?
Department manager.
I'm just curious whether, because you're kind of making a distinction in the manual about certain things being management or non-management, I'm kind of curious as to what management means. Is it anyone who supervises another staff person, or is it a certain level within the organization that says you're a manager versus a frontline supervisor? Or is that just a distinction without a difference in the manual?
I feel, Megan may feel differently, that it shouldn't be as strictly defined in the HRGs. You know, I think, for example, if a department manager had said, hey, there is someone who isn't a supervisor, who is showing great leadership ability, and it's in the town's interest to develop those abilities, and I would like for this person to attend whatever, then, that would be permitted and allowed. By leaving it a little bit fluid is that there may be another department manager in the future or another administrator in the future who may have a stricter thought on that or a different feeling towards it. Mm-hmm. And so without having to come back and get another amendment to the HRGs, I think just kind of leave it to the discretion of the decision maker to make the call.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought maybe my question was not clearly put to you. I was moving sort of beyond the training issue and just in terms of who is considered to be management within Mount Pleasant as opposed to non-management.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, that should have said that more clearly.
So we have at every level a department head, most have deputy or assistants, and then many have division chiefs of all the different divisions. And to me, that is management and above. And then you have, like, for instance, foremen, crewmen, line supervisors who would be your supervisory staff. So that's kind of where I would draw the line.
Got it. So frontline supervisors and then above that, management staff.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Great. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay. And then we do mention right now in the HR guidelines that people have to turn in uniforms or equipment or it is deducted from their last paycheck, but we want to have a standalone policy with regard to those things. Any other questions on new policies? And then really this is just minor stuff that I kind of keep track of and need to make sure that we get in it. We currently have under our reasons for disciplinary action, number 17 reads improper or unauthorized use or disclosure of town records or documents. And we would like to add or information. Experience teaches us things and I've learned that I can give information even if it's not a document. So I want to include that. We have the new IT regulations that were part of the group, the focus group that Ms. Kotoff brought up earlier in the season, so we'll feed into that. Again, termination date is always in HR the last day you work or get paid. And we recognize we have shift workers who give a calendar two-week notice, and maybe their last shift was 2 days before that. And the question was, do you put the last day of the notice or the last day they worked? And we just want to confirm it's the last day that they actually work. When payroll errors occur, whether we cause it or an employee causes it, we pay it back, no matter which way that the reason flowed. But if there's an extenuating circumstance, we would like the town administrator to be able to waive part or all of it. That would be very unusual and rare, but we want to have that in our pocket if we need it. Our current policy for police officers says that they cannot be intoxicated while they're in uniform, and the police chief requested a long time ago that we add cannot consume alcohol at all.
Wait, what?
No alcohol at all.
That's
when they're in uniform.
Well, in uniform.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
And then also, we clarify that police officers receive regular pay, not civil leave pay. Like I get jury duty pay when I served on a jury recently, went up for jury leave. When you go to court, as part of their essential job function, because they do that quite often. So we just want to clarify that. We also want to bring the town administrator's administration of the compensation plan to align with the budget policy. We have a paragraph that just kicks off the whole compensation section, so really nothing's going to change. He stays aligned with the budget policy, but we want to dovetail our policies together. And then annual evaluations are done on a calendar year basis, and we ask the department managers give them to employees by February. And that kind of coincides with the budget process, but we've become more flexible with that, so we would like to give some flexibility to the deadline as well. We will always have a designated deadline. We'd like to switch that verbiage. And then one other thing I'd like to add is that firefighters who work 24-hour shifts and they are hurt and can no longer do their physical job, we do the best that we can to have light duty assignments for them, and quite often that happens to be in an office. And so they're now working 37 and a half hours a week instead of 24-hour shifts, and we've been manually calculating and converting their balances for sick and vacation and holiday and personal holidays. It's real manual, and we'd like to just say, keep accruing at your 24-hour rate. Maybe you only need to use 7.5 hours if you need to be off this Friday instead of 24 hours. It's very much to their benefit. But administratively, it would be a huge burden lifted off of the finance and HR staffs, and we think it's for the greater good. And so those are the changes we'd like to incorporate with an effective date of July the 1st.
Does anybody have any comments? Mr. Berman?
That's a lot of work, so I appreciate that. I will say for those who don't have experience in either local or state government, the changes that are being proposed here, I think, and I work for the county, they are great recruiting tools. Benefits here are so much more generous than at the state or other local levels, so I think that really should help us to not only recruit good people, good staff here, but also from retention standpoint. So I hope folks realize how lucky they are to work for the town, because a lot of these benefits are just not available in other places locally here, so I do appreciate that. Question for Ms. Kotoff. Marcy, do any of these changes have any significant budget implications, such as kind of the changes in leave and that sort of thing?
No, sir, not significant. And the ones that do, I think we are covered for in our non-departmental account.
Okay. That's all I have.
I would just like to add, I asked this in our pre-meeting as well. Obviously, there's a lot of items that Ms. Kelly just went over for us, and just wanted to let folks know it's a lot of work to not only do, as Councilman Brimmer said, do the legwork, but also to actually change the guidelines and put this into a format so that it can be handed out when people are hired, et cetera. So can you just enlighten us, when was the last time that we had a major update?
A major revision was in 2015, and then we printed another one in 2017 with a couple of policies that had been changed.
Okay, so it probably is very helpful from a cost-saving cost standpoint that we kind of save up to the degree that we can and not do major changes, but every once in a while.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm glad we could get a lot of things accomplished at once. Thank you so much to staff for that. Anything else? So do you need a motion from us to move this on to council? Yes.
Recommendation to policy, please. And at council, it would be considered as a resolution.
Okay.
So moved.
And I'll second, and I'll just comment as well. It sounds like a lot of these changes are taking place because of the additional capacity or capabilities of our new technology that we're using, the new software. So I think that also prompts, you know, makes things a lot easier in many ways. So I appreciate all the staff's hard work in getting that up and running as well, because I know I've done those a couple of times when you're pulling in budget and HR and all that together, and it's challenging. It's a big undertaking. So I'm glad to see that that's helping the operations of HR be more efficient.
Is that a second?
It is a second.
Okay. All in favor of a resolution to update our HR guidelines and to pass this on to full council?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Okay. I mean, that wasn't a no for me. That was no, nobody's opposed. Okay. Thank you so much. And that was our last item. So, I'm sorry.
The non-discriminatory policies.
Oh, I thought that was part of what you went over. I apologize.
Do we need to have a separate? Because this is an ordinance, or is it, because will it?
Yeah, I think it would be good to take a few minutes if we can.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But Julia?
I have hard copies. Right. Does anyone need hard copies of what we're talking about?
Sure. Are these the same thing?
One's 98 and one's 99. Hello, madam. You covered so much, I thought you covered the ordinances too.
Did you have one more of the?
Of.
We only got one of those.
Oh.
No, this is both 98.
These are all 98.
98, 99. It's 99.
99?
I got it. I'm good.
98, 99? Mm-hmm. Okay. Hello, everyone. So since last committee, we were instructed to draft form ordinances for the town related to equal protection with regard to fair housing and public accommodation. So we took the current form ordinance that has been adopted by the City of Charleston, North Charleston, and Folly Beach, and incorporated it as two general chapters within our code of ordinances under general regulations. And like we discussed last month, and I had some brief conversation over the weekend with Councilman Brimmer. This treats both violations of these ordinances. They're treated as a general misdemeanor, which would be a fine up to $500, prerogative of the municipal court, of course. But if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. Otherwise, I would ask for a motion to go to council to adopt these two ordinances.
I move that we bring these ordinances before full council for adoption next Tuesday.
I will say that, well, I won't say anything until we get a second, I guess, but.
I thought maybe we were going to do the second. I will second that.
If I may.
Mm-hmm.
Last time we met on this issue in committee, I raised some concerns that I had personally just about extending. Let me say first that I think the intent of this is absolutely honorable, and I'd certainly support the intent behind it. I do have some sort of philosophical and logistical questions that have not been able to be answered yet, having gotten this at the end of the week. So I just feel like for me personally, I need to have some questions answered before I can support this or oppose it either way. So today I'm going to abstain from voting until I can take more time with it and get some questions answered. I certainly may, by the time council comes around, be able to support it, but I just don't feel comfortable that my questions have been answered yet. So that's where I am today.
Could you please share, would you be willing to share your questions or not?
Some. I guess from a philosophical standpoint, I have some discomfort with extending what's in these documents beyond the operations of town government. I certainly support the changes in the HR manual, and I think how we operate and how we treat our employees is absolutely under our purview. When we start extending those protections beyond the town into businesses and to private entities, there's just questions I have about legalities. because we're talking about issues now that extend beyond the town. We're talking about state laws and federal law. And I just want to make sure that what we're doing here doesn't extend beyond where I think town government should be. Even though I support this, you know, there is a political aspect. There's a political statement, I think, in these ordinances. And I just have to be comfortable that we're not using town ordinances to make political statements, because I think that opens up, you know, we're a very political culture these days. Everything becomes a big issue, and I just want to make sure that we're not putting ourselves in a position that we are going beyond where I think town government should go. I think the intent here is absolutely honorable, but I want to make sure that what's here that I feel like is addressing things within the town. And I think we heard last time in committee, this really is not an issue that has been in the town. It's happening around, but not in the town. And so I just have to have a higher comfort level than I have today to move this forward or recommend moving it forward to council. So I plan on having more discussions with the legal, some folks in the community, just to get to that point. But I really just believe that town ordinances, for the most part, should regulate how we operate as a town. And when we start going beyond that into the private businesses and such, I just need to do some more work on that, I guess.
That definitely brings up some discussion that I thought we weren't going to need to have, because I might be misunderstanding something. It was my understanding that a lot of what we are now simply making sure is part of our code, is codified here, is really already policy that's in place, not just with the town and hiring, but also because we're talking about people being able to buy or rent a home. We're not bringing up some of the incendiary things that have occurred around the country and things, are we? I don't think we are doing that. So we're saying in code, if we pass this, we're saying that someone cannot be discriminated against for buying a home, renting an apartment, renting a home, whatever, correct? That's correct.
Or eating at a restaurant.
Right, eating at a restaurant, right. And then even the thing, enjoyment and privileges of public accommodations. It even has a clause in here that is specific to the exemptions regarding, for instance, religious organizations, et cetera, correct? Am I misinterpreting?
Correct. The provisions of this article do not apply to a private club or other establishment, not in fact open to the general public. It has that exemption.
Yeah, to me, this is really just sort of a point of clarification. Mm-hmm. There's already federal law that has not yet been litigated over the definitions. So what we're really doing is we are defining non-discrimination in a more clear way, is what IVUS is doing. And I think doing it for HR, doing it for housing, doing it for public accommodations is something that is very good for the town. I think it's a very positive thing, and I think that full council should have an opportunity to take a look at this.
Yeah, and I don't really have a problem with that. I'm happy for it to go to council. I think there's several Supreme Court decisions that are actually coming out here very soon. I think one came out today, actually, around this issue. So I just am not clear on why the town should be defining these things when there are actions being taken at higher levels of government that will define those for us in some ways. And so I'm happy to have the discussion. I'm happy to support things that are non-discriminatory. I just, my concern is how far out from town operations do we go? And I'm not quite there yet, so I need to do some more thinking.
That while we wait for these things to come down, because it's been years, I think that taking some action now is also an indication of, and we're not forging new ground here. This is something that Charleston, North Charleston, Folly Beach, and even Columbia have already taken this step and done this as a town. So if our state capital has already done this, I don't see any issue with us moving forward with this.
That was the same position that I had seen on this. So, Well, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Abstaining?
One abstention.
Thank you. Are there any other matters or public discussion at this time? If not, then we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
I'll give you a hand back. One last thing to